welcome to today's conversation with the participants in the Paris 8 and NWP collaboration on podcasts for a global audience, a studio on the Atlantic. And I'll ask my guests to introduce themselves today. Waleed, would you begin?
Hi, everyone. My name is Waleed Ajarashedi. So I'm a writer and the head of the online magazine called Frictions.
Thank you. Lena?
My name is Lena, and I'm about to finish my third year at Paris 8 as a creative writing student.
And Adam?
My name is Adam. I am a first-year student in the nonfiction writing program here at the University of Iowa.
Thank you so much. So this group constitutes about a third of the participants in a two-year project to write, record, and publish nonfiction podcasts. And many of us come to this project, not Waleed, but the others of us, are mostly creative writers. So we write for the page. And one of the challenges and opportunities of this project is to learn to write for the ear, for a different mode and media. And so we've been thinking and talking a lot about that. But I wonder, Waleed, could you tell us a little bit about the initiation of this project? How did this come to be, and how did you find the nonfiction writing program?
Yes, actually, the story starts 4 years ago when we did start Frictions. And one of the main ideas of Frictions is the idea that there is a global conversation that whether you're in Paris, Rio, Shanghai, Iowa City, in the end, we talk about the same topics but with different views. And one of the very first project that I thought of was the idea of having different perspectives from writers coming from the US and France, because they are countries with a huge literary tradition and actually also countries that face the same kind of, I would say, topic, dilemma from a, I would say, local perspective. And 2 years later, I was really lucky and grateful to be actually selected to be a resident for the IWP program here in Iowa City. And then actually I started the conversation with the IWP folks, and then they said, look, I think your idea of collaboration could be really interesting. And why not thinking about nonfiction? And the fact also that at Frictions, we're doing a lot of podcasts. So yeah, the idea actually came from there. And also, besides this, what I really found interesting is the fact that the label nonfiction itself is quite blurry in France compared to the genre in the US, where it's something much more, I would say, clear. And much more, I would say, from marketing perspective, identified. While in France, we think nonfiction a little bit not as identified as a general.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And it's exciting to hear the International Writers Program is a really long-standing program on campus that brings 20 writers from different countries every year.
Actually, the spring residence, which is quite unique because normally it happens on the fall. Mm. So we are about 20, but normally it's more like 30 to 40 writers from all around the world. Yeah.
Here today, we also have two of the master's students who have written and are recording podcasts for our first and second season. This is a two-year project so far. And I wonder if we could hear a bit from you folks. As people who work as writers, who have experience writing from the page, what were some of the ways that you started to think about the kind of project you would write for a podcast? And what were some of the initial realizations or challenges you faced while developing that project? Lena, would you start?
Yeah. One of the first thing I thought was that it was a perfect occasion because in my writing, I already integrate other voices, especially my father's voice. So I immediately thought that's amazing if people can hear as I receive it and not how I transform it in my writing. Mm-hmm. So it was an occasion also to, in a way, honor the thing I view as a gift, in a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also it was interesting because at first it was a text I had written before. So it was really interesting to just see what worked and what just didn't pass through this oral, like...
Didn't translate quite for the medium.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're, as a writer, someone thinking about documentary, like thinking about the materials and the world that you're pulling into your work. And the opportunity of the podcast was really to also document the sound of those materials. It's really beautiful. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Adam, what are some things, opportunities that you came across or ways you were thinking about the project that you wrote for a podcast?
It just so happened there had been a news story that I was interested in that dealt with protest and First Amendment freedoms and things like that. And so this was an opportunity for me to have a purpose that allowed me to follow my curiosity. And so I have had the opportunity now to speak to a couple of different people who were directly involved. And then my job, as I'm beginning to turn this into a podcast, is to figure out how to fairly represent those voices and give them equal opportunity to share the truth as they see it. And then how do I, as the choreographer of all these voices, bring in a kind of organization so that the listener feels as if they've been taken on a journey. Waleed's, even in this week, has been really helpful, offering some guidance on how to make something a narrative of discovery rather than just pure reportage or simply voices that that don't offer a journey.
Yes. Yeah. That's really beautiful to hear that in this moment of physical exchange, in-person exchange, the work that we've been doing to learn about the podcast forum, there's this opportunity while you've got to sit in on your workshop, which is traditionally a creative writing workshop looking at the page, but you workshopped a script for the podcast.
Actually, that was also for me a learning experience, because after that class, I thought actually that's something even at an immediate level as friction we could do. Actually, it's like really kind of workshop with the authors we're working with. As friction's audience needed a story, because what we do publish story, whether the storytellers are journalists, novelists, writers, nonfiction writers, people do expect a story. So if it's something that is too contemplative, the problem that you might have is that after just a couple of minutes, people will say, hey, it's a nice voice, but I don't really understand what's the point, what the storyteller is trying to tell me. So my point is always about what's the story trying to tell. Mm-hmm. And okay, indeed, the language is important. Poetic is super important. Like literary writers, that's actually the challenge, like being at the same time bringing their poetry in, but also meeting the expectation or telling the story and commenting on a social fact or a global topic.
Well, it's something you mentioned in our studies of the podcast, is that the podcast, when you're developing a project for a podcast, it's a real opportunity to think about intimacy and intimacy with the listener. And it is a form well suited for intimate topics and conversations, things that are private or that, you know, you maybe would tell to one person at a time. And I think that, you know, that illuminated something for me when I was thinking about what our students would develop. And I wonder if we could hear from Adam and Lena a little bit. Was that something you thought about in advance of developing this project? Or what are the ways that as you've written and started and recorded that you were thinking about intimacy?
As I've been recording these interviews and from people with very different points of view, like sort of radically different points of view, one of the things that I've come to appreciate is the way that having those voices, which I recorded separately, become part of a conversation with one another in the way that I'm editing, in the way that I'm choosing to juxtapose the interviews that I've conducted, allows for what is in the outside world, a very loud conversation that's very chaotic and not much listening is happening. It's giving us the opportunity, or giving me the opportunity at least, and I hope the audience eventually, the opportunity to have a quieter understanding of where people are coming from without all of the noise that happens when those voices clash out in the world. And so I feel as if this is an opportunity that that wouldn't work as well on the page because we wouldn't hear those voices, but might also not work quite as well in our day-to-day or interactive lives.
There's like this song in the podcast that I'm singing with my father. So yeah, it was really personal, became something that others can relate and like can be with me in that song and in that place. But I wanted to say that, because when you're commenting a text, sometimes it's hard to, I don't know, I feel like text are kind of a harder place to comment on, I don't know. And I feel like podcast is also like closest to people in a way that, because it's just oral and it's more common.
If I can add something to what has been said, especially by just previously about the clash of narratives, I think that's very important. It's really, when we started fiction, one of the main ideas is that it seems that everybody is speaking about the same thing, but we're just waiting for our turn to speak instead of really listening. Mm-hmm. And just like people taking 10 minutes, just 10 minutes, to really listen to someone's perspective or experience. I'm not saying this is going to change their mind, but at least they can understand. And for me, like, what I would say from a political perspective, I mean, in the last 20 years, every time there is an election, it seems that collectively we're puzzled by the results. And every time I'm like, why didn't we see it coming?
Yes.
And I just realized it's because actually I don't hear another narrative, or maybe I refuse to hear it. And so things happen and I'm like, how couldn't see it before? And I think the roles of stories are actually to highlight different point of view and perspective. It doesn't mean to agree with or to say that it justifies anything, but at least to understand where it comes from.
Thank you so much. It makes me think about how the quietness we're talking about is actually a kind of silencing of background noise and an opportunity to listen, which is so obvious as an element of the podcast, but is changed somehow from the written forms that some of us work in. And I think that is really beautiful. So thank you so much, you, all of you. Okay, welcome back. We have two other writers here today. I wonder if each of you would introduce yourself and say a little bit about where you are in the world and in your studies as writers at this point.
Hi, I'm Céline, Céline Bagot. I graduated last year in Paris 8, and so I participated to the podcast program. Mm-hmm.
The first season, so yeah. I was part of. Yes, great.
Hi, I'm Sarah Cuttry. I was a nonfiction writing program student. I'm currently in my third year, and I participated last year in the first season and am trying to participate again this year in the second season.
Has there been any way that the experience of recording or writing for a podcast has entered into your writing process after the podcast? Has it shaped any of the ways you've thought about topics like audience or voice or sentences or sound, or not so much?
I'd say the first thought that occurs to me when you ask that question is that it has shifted my understanding of the performance of written material, because so much of a writer's life is additionally going out and reading or talking about what you're writing. It's not just sitting alone in a room and writing, which is certainly my safe space. So the podcast project, I think, has shifted my understanding of what writing for the ear, not just in the podcast form, but just in the more oratory kind of arena, looks like.
Thank you.
For me, I don't know if it changed so much the way I write it. I would say it gave me the sense of a text made for a mini performance. So. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So I did my podcast with my friend, the writer and journalist Wyatt Williams. And one of the things that we share, one of the foundations of our friendship, is an interest in food. And so from that, we each approached a relationship between food and belonging that actually became really a relationship between food and place, right? Because that's always triangulated in that concept. And so for my portion of the podcast, I was thinking about the role of a food that's called achar, that is a spicy pickled food, right? That is part of my father's culture in Nepal. And when I go there, I bring back jars from his mother for him. And that's a sign of home. But it's interesting to me that this very located in place food becomes this diasporic object that the TSA then has to deal with, mm-hmm, and confront. And my friend Wyatt thought about the role of Totina's pizza rolls and hyper-processed food within this Iowan landscape. And so we're coming at it from kind of opposite directions and opposite styles, but approaching the same fundamental displacement of food and belonging.
Thank you so much. Today we also have Lionel Hufel, Nitlin Nugent, and Tisa Bryant, who are collaborators in this podcast project as well. And I wonder if each of you could introduce yourselves, please.
Okay, I'm Lionel Hufel. So I'm an academic, I'm an author and a publisher. I teach comparative literature and creative writing at Paris 8. So, and I'm running the program in creative writing at Paris 8.
Thank you.
I'm Lynn Nugent. I'm the editor of the Iowa Review.
I'm Tisa Bryant. I'm assistant professor of nonfiction here at the University of Iowa.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with Waleed about Frictions Media and some of our podcasters about the work they've written and recorded for this two-year project. And I wonder if we could hear a little bit from our other editor-in-chief, who's part of this collaboration, Lynn, a little bit about the Iowa Review. And something wonderful about your participation is that you're also an alumni of our MFA program. And I wonder if you could just speak a little bit about the intersection of those experiences.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really rich experience for me, having been part of this collaboration, because I think questions of what nonfiction is keep coming up as we have these discussions with each other. And so that's always been dear to my heart, nonfiction as a genre. I haven't gone through the MFA program here. And also the form of podcasting as a way to produce nonfiction texts is fascinating to me. Having been around Iowa City and the university and the Iowa Review since the early 2000s, there was no podcasting at the time. And so it's been fun to watch it emerge.
That's great to realize that whole span has changed a lot in terms of podcasting.
Absolutely. And so since it is still so new, it's kind of like the Wild West in terms of its potential. And so I, you know, would like to see it being used for alternative, indie, and artistic purposes just as much as, you know, how everything eventually gets overtaken with mass media and capitalism and making tons of money. So it's nice to see this project try to develop that artistic space for podcasting.
Yeah, that's wonderful. We were just talking about some of the podcast conventions that we're learning about and adopting, but certainly as writers, we have ideas about how to break things often too, and how to bring artistic techniques to them. And I'm excited about that and how these projects kind of even demonstrate some of the future of what podcasts could incorporate as well. That's great. Thank you. Tisa, would you say a little bit about your experience of coaching and guiding students to compose podcasts this year? You're also someone who works in multimedia, thinks about media and screens often. And could you reflect for us a little bit about what it's been like to be a leader in this program?
Yeah, you know, it's been challenging and interesting and a way to really learn and expand. I mean, I don't have a podcasting background, but as you said, I do like to work with visual images and with moving images. And so there's something that I'm transferring from my practice with visual images and understanding how to write for the image and the kind of visual narrative rhythm through editing that you learn about when you're writing alongside film, for example, and just what the relationship is between that and writing for the ear. You know, it's kind of like a writing for the eye where you're reading images, you know, so writing for the ear where you're listening for them. And, you know, it affects your relationship to time and how you say things, how many words you use. And it's making it very evident. You know, I'm acutely aware of those differences between what we in the United States call the essay and what the script actually is for a podcast. And just to pick up on what Lynn was just saying earlier about just the advent of the podcast and the kind of proliferation of podcasts, you know, we've made very subtle shifts also from the radio news segment kind of radio theater, right? The the storytelling mm-hmm. kinds of programs that have been on for a while. And there's been a lot of kind of cross genre, if you will, kind of movement between those radio forms that I'm paying attention to too, like what makes a podcast so specifically itself as compared to, you know, other just as dramatized radio news segments or profiles or something that's more like a radio magazine segment. It's been really great. And so I'm kind of learning alongside students and from students, which is lovely and humbling and necessary.
Definitely.
To try to get to what's next in figuring out what this creative space is actually for writers like us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And something I was reflecting on is that really none of us in the project are experts in the podcast form except for Waleed. And so we are necessarily learning a lot through this process. And like you, I also bring my interest in image text and I try to apply what I know from that to sound and text, I suppose. But something I notice when people begin to work with image and text on the page is that they forget that the image is doing a lot of work to show or illustrate an idea. And they try to kind of duplicate that and write over what the image is already doing. And I think something transferable from that is also that as a writer, I would often forget that so much is conveyed in sound that I don't have to describe in tone. And I think our writers did come up against that at first and have learned to kind of shape and edit their texts backwards. Lionel, you are an academic, as you say, but you're also the person who started this creative writing program at Paris 8 and has been the first collaborator with Waleed to invent this podcast project. Can you talk a little bit about those initial stages of thinking through the project and maybe creative writing as you're doing it at Paris 8 too?
I think it's not quite different from what you are doing here. I think we have many in common, but we're not a non-fiction writing program and we're not neither a DI or a writer's workshop. We're in between both. So we do literature. We do writing. We teach writing and we practice writing all together. At the beginning of the program, my colleague Olivia Rosenthal and myself wanted to expand literature beyond the book and the written thing. But, you know, our students want to publish books. They want to do texts. So we experiment other forms of publishing from the beginning. So that's why I've always been interested in podcast, because podcast, there are too many podcasts, that's just true, but podcast is blooming up because it's, I would say, a light form of publishing, but it can be publishing. And I think what we have done is to think about this podcast program as a publishing program as well. That's why we have worked with Waleed, mm-hmm. who's a professional, and we have worked very professionally with that. And we've worked to find a place where there is an audience, not to do podcast only for us and to practice and to, but also to think to our potential audience and to find a space in the publishing realm. So that's why I was very interested. I was very interested in working with you here at the University of Iowa, because you're at the University of Iowa, but not only because it's a US program, and as a professor, I'm interested in listening to new voices. And that was interesting for us, and it's still interesting to hear these voices from different countries that live maybe 3,000 kilometers away from each other. So maybe they have other visions on the world. So that's interesting for that. And I like the idea of expand the idea of literature. Literature has not always been a written thing. That can be for here as well. And I like in the podcast the oral and tone and the conversation you can have. So if they can work on these different issues, that will be interesting. And that's interesting.
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, I think the theme of listening is something that's come up in our conversation, certainly, and this opportunity to work between international entities, programs, writers, cultures has really, I think, illuminated some things for me too, as I've been listening to folks work and collaborate and talk. And I wonder if I could ask each of you if there is something that you've been reflecting on. Maybe it is a podcast or a writing technique that our students are realizing about their own work as they develop and improve it, but or maybe it's something about the state of writing in the world or the cultural differences between genres as we've encountered them through this exchange. But is there something that you have like felt a little light bulb go off about as we've been engaging in these exchanges?
So one of the things that I kept coming back to and thinking about is writing culture and what it is in both countries, or I should say cities, since we confined ourselves to the cities of Iowa City and Paris. And as I was walking down the street in Paris, there would be a restaurant like one we ate at called Les Editeurs. And then I would see something called La Poésie and say, what's that? Is that a bookstore? Oh, no, it's a restaurant. And so daily life and writing culture and great literature seem very intertwined. And so I was reflecting on that and then what we have here, which is a very strong MFA culture. And what are the differences and how now that people like Lionel are starting MFAs in France, how is that changing the writing culture over there? And so, I mean, that was one whole area I kept returning to. And then the other one was, what is nonfiction in France and versus what is it here? Because one of the very first things Walid said to me in our first meeting was, I mean, he was very fixated on working with the nonfiction writing program for his podcast project. And he said, we don't have, you know, if we have a book by Annie Ernaux that we would, that in the US would be classified as essay, memoir, or some kind of nonfiction, they would put it in the novels section, roman. And this blew my mind because this is a novel. I did not know that. And just terminology and the differences in terminology and how that reflects a certain difference in understanding the concepts, that is also something that I keep returning to.
Yeah, and I would say the same. I mean, I think that has been, you know, the conversation that we have kept returning to whenever we've had, there's never a dull moment, you know, we immediately kind of get back to these kinds of questions. And even last night, after Hanif Abdurraqib's reading from his new book, There's Always This Year, which in the U.S. context in publishing and for audiences is considered a book-length work of creative or lyric nonfiction. And so I've been also thinking about the word roman, which I've only translated into English as novel, but of course without all of the kind of the cultural contexts that go with the word roman. So I've been thinking about that so much, you know, that what we mean by novel isn't the same thing. So it's not just fiction, nonfiction. This idea of, you know, perhaps moving someone through a book-length experience, you know, through the whole narrative arc, you know, that's the roman. You know, whether it's a factual kind of nonfiction experience, regardless of its style, or if it's a fictional one. And it's just been very interesting that everything that I've admired / fetishized about the French and about French literature has been turned on its head in really generative and necessary ways since meeting Walid and Lionel, and I'm glad for it. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, thank you. we're glad too, and we're very grateful as well. I think the conversation is ongoing on these topics. We haven't solved it. Because if we look at France, for instance, the Annie Ernaux's case, we wouldn't say it's a novel because she doesn't want to be called a novel, and she expels from the realm of novels. But we will call that literature. And there is no this clear distinction in between fiction and nonfiction. I think it's a US thing, this distinction in between fiction and nonfiction. We have it, for instance, in the bookshop. You have the literature shelves, sometimes with a corner with poetry or drama, and you have the other documents, the essays in humanities, social sciences, testimonies, and so on and so forth. But what we can see is that many of our students want to write personal writing. I would say personal writing. So you can call it a memoir, you can call it a personal essay. And I was surprised that in the NWP here, the most important word is writing. It's not, for me, it's not nonfiction, it's writing. Yes, we used to fetishize l'écriture in France. Is there writing or is there not writing? And when we say that, is that are you playing with not only language, but forms and rhetoric in critical ways? And for me, that's literature. It can be fiction, it can be nonfiction, and sometimes, very often, novels are less innovative than many essays in terms of language or style or forms. So to me, the question is, are you playing critically with forms or not, with language or not? And I could see that here you're mainly a program in writing. Nonfiction is important, but it, first of all, you need writing. And literary writing, it's much more literary than I used to imagine. I thought that it was closer from journalism or critical essays, but in fact, I haven't seen that. I've, above all, seen personal writing, investigative writings, things like that. So for me, it's literature.
Yeah, thank you for reflecting. I think we haven't solved it yet. And it is really fascinating that there are all these English-French cognates that I think get us confused. But I think sometimes I realize when I'm speaking to my French colleagues, we say the word novel, but they might constitute a book of long-form book of nonfiction as a novel because it's a piece of art, because novel means a piece of writing that's interested in art making. And that's not – and here in our, you know, our university that's often divided by program and genre, a novel is not something I'm working on. You know, I would say that's for the fiction writers, but it is it's like a distinction between forms of that are interested ultimately in the production of art or forms that are ultimately interested in the production of ideas or information or clearly delivered facts. And before our first event at the Centre Pompidou, we were doing a dress rehearsal. We had a lot of people on stage. Lionel was organizing so many bodies, and it just came up in the audience. I was sitting next to students that the word essay only meant a critical piece of writing, and I audibly gasped. But we're in France, and we're talking about l'essai, to try. We quote that endlessly in our program. That's what it means. And it is, for us, you know, we are arts writing program, but we are a program of the essay. You know, that's what we're doing, which is our art form. And so there's a sort of irony too, that there's this kind of looping where we borrowed the term from the French, from Montaigne at a certain point, but it's lived its own life, obviously, in France, absolutely, and become something else. And for us, like for me, the essay often means the lyric essay or a form that's allowing the person to think through an idea in a manner that's really engaging and artful and often poetic. But will you talk for just a minute more about, clear the record, what is an essay today in France? What does that mean for you and your students?
Not exactly what you are doing here. It's less literary. And I would love to call myself an essayist. But if I do that, the people who use the term essayist are either in social sciences or in politics, you know, and you have all these political essays. So I don't want to play with these guys, you know. So that's very, for me, for instance, here I would be a nonfiction writer, and that will be quite clear. In France, it's not very clear what I am, but I have two other etymology of the essay. One of the meaning of the essay at the beginning were weighing, balance, you know, when you have a balance.
Wow, no, I hadn't heard, like a scale.
Yeah. And so you can say, okay, a bit like that, and you can find the balance of the things, you know. So, but there is another very weird etymology of the essay, and there is a famous text in France by Jean Starobinski, who was a literary critic from Switzerland, and very, very good. He was a great specialist of Jean-Jacques Rousseau and Montaigne. And he recalls that this is the same origin than what we call in French un essaim, which is a hive for bees, you know? And so that's a hive propelling in the air. So the idea of multitude is enclosed in the idea of the essay. It's not a univocal voice. It contains multitude, like Bob Dylan used to say. It contains multitude, the essay. So that's interesting, because these different genealogies are so interesting, so experimental, but it has been reduced in the common language in France, and it's not here. I'm absolutely endorsing your understanding of the essay.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I love this image of the hive as something. You know, I am a little tired of my own voice saying to essay, to try, an attempt.
I will send you the text.
I would love to read it, yes. And I think we should probably replace, if you ever visit the Nonfiction Writing House, we have a pinata of Montaigne in a cabinet. And maybe that should be a pinata of a hive in the future.
Yeah, the pinata of a hive. That I think that would actually be a pinata of the hive would be a wonderful evocation of what we're asking ourselves to do, the kinds of risks we're asking students to take with their own understanding of form and of genre, you know, all of these kind of taxonomies. You know, do you dare hit a hive with a stick and see what happens next? But, you know, that, and just to go back to Hanif Abdurraqib for a moment, you know, where the, you know, the essay is still the vehicle within this kind of book length work. Last night, he also talked about, I was asking him about like a multitude of voices and this kind of question of address. And so and I also wanted to offer to Lionel that one of the terms for the memoir is also life writing in some corners, you know, so that's not a singular act, you know, that it is multiple, that it's about the world. Like he wasn't just writing about himself, you know, it's his family, his friends, all of these different basketball players. It's music, it's love, it's breakups, it's like so much that anyone could feel addressed from any given moment and any given vantage point. And I do think that I'm stressing that because I'm thinking about it too, like how important it is for the sense of plurality and of always being engaged with the world and all of its people and all the stuff that's in you, because, you know, we can tire of our own voices. But only if we cease to be in conversation with others, you know.
Yeah, thank you. As you're talking, I'm thinking about how we often, John DeGatta's joke is that when someone says, oh, you write nonfiction, they think that you're writing the next big history of tall ships.
Or salt.
Or a president's biography or something like that. When actually, I mean, I think what you're talking about is another way that nonfiction writers are challenged is that because we're writing from the first person, there's often this this act is suspect, that it's very navel-gazing or overly inward and not faced outward, when really what we're describing with the image of the hive is as the essay is a kind of writing among or to and from togetherness. And so that's like a multitude that is from a very subjective perspective, but is able to conjure that feeling of being in conversation. And I think that's why I keep coming back to the essay as a form, because it surprises me that way too. And thank you for that image.
And the essay as a form is the title of an essay by Theodor Adorno.
You That's know, right. Yes. Yeah. Lots of essays on the essay. on the essay that exists.
Yes. Hive mind at work.
Lynn, I wonder if we could close with you. And I wonder if, as an editor who is seeing a lot of writers submit to your journal, it's very reputable. And as someone who is whose curatorial efforts are shaping the definition of the essay as it's being put out in the world, what are you seeing in terms of the ways that nonfiction is being shaped by writers who are submitting today? And what are some things you're thinking about as an editor in terms of sort of curating nonfiction in the journal?
You know, I think I have the great advantage of having a staff full of students at the Iowa Review, and they're always looking for what's new, different, and exciting. And so I always bring up the essay about Pokemon balls that came out in the latest issue.
Yes, yes.
And how, you know, the Pokemon ball is this, you know, space that is so, you know, large on the inside, you know, but seeming small and going into a very philosophical dimension. So with it, and so I, you know, as a 51-year-old would never have thought to pursue that path. And so I, you know, I learn so much every day from what the students are curating at the Iowa Review. So yeah, I'm glad that that space exists for them to exert their talents in that direction. And honestly, I kind of just follow their lead. I mean, that's sort of the ideal for me.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. That's sort of the idea of learning from your students as a teacher is also happening to you as an editor and an organizer of other readers.
Absolutely. Great. Absolutely.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for your time and talking to us. And we're going to head out to the rest of our day during the Mission Creek Festival in beautiful Iowa City. So thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you should be on it.